Sephora stores are everywhere you are. So just pop in when you need a brown lip to match your 90s playlist, a confidence boost before your interview, or a last-minute gift for mom's birthday. There's always a Sephora near you. Just pop in. Use our store locator to find your local Sephora or Sephora at Kohl's.
We give you all the viral stories that are just about to drop. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. If you keep scrolling, scrolling, scrolling and you're never gonna stop, then please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. From stupid songs and dances, all the cultural advances, we will cover them from bottom to the top. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, I promise you'll appease our please, oh please, you please don't let this flop.
Hi, I'm EJ Dixon.
And I'm Brittany Spanos. Welcome to Don't Let This Flop,
a podcast about TikTok brought to you by Rolling Stone,
where we cancel dogs and celebrate hot people.
That's true. We do both of those things on here. So we typically like to keep things kind of light on here because we love TikTok and we want to celebrate all that it has to offer, such as himbos and thirst traps and Anna Marie Tendler duvet hacks. But we also need to acknowledge TikTok's failures in various regards. And this is an important moment, I think, to do that.
Yeah, and obviously, if anyone's been following the news, a couple weeks ago, there was a massive, massive tragedy at AstroWorld Fest in Texas, which is a festival that Travis Scott began in his hometown of Houston. And it was just a lot of sort of stories we've seen before with concert safety. We've seen this happen at Woodstock 99. We've seen this happen, at festivals in the 60s, like where there was a huge problem with a lack of security and a lack of train security, which led to a lot of people being crushed to death, a lot of people being hospitalized, people going into cardiac arrest because the crowd got a little too wild. The crowd was pushing up against each other. There was also an overcrowding situation. A lot of people had flooded the festival earlier in the day and jumped the gate. So there was hundreds, if not thousands, of extra bodies that should not have been at the festival. And one of the biggest and most controversial parts about this, beyond, of course, the many tragic losses of lives that we've seen, is that Travis Scott continued to perform the concert as many fans screamed stop. There was a lot of people trying to get the concert to end because of the safety issues, and Travis Scott continued to perform. So it was just a really shitty and tragic event all around.
I was actually online, and this is where TikTok comes in. I was online the morning that the story broke, covering it, and I was on social media trying to find, people who were there, witness accounts, footage from the concert itself, people to reach out to. And what I ended up seeing a ton of was conspiracy theories, specifically satanic conspiracy theories. A lot of content like this.
Travis Scott's Astro World stage represented an upside down cross with portal to hell.
People were claiming that they saw souls floating to the top of the stage, that the stage was an upside down cross, that it looked like his stage was the mouth of hell. This was stuff that was getting millions and millions and millions of views. Did you see a lot of this the morning after the event?
The thing is that that's something, and of course, it's really, really thrived with this event. But I mean, that's something that's followed Travis Scott a little bit in his career. So there is a certain type of way that Travis interacts with live audiences. He is one that sort of incites a lot of chaos at his shows. There was a story that had resurfaced about how he had encouraged a fan to jump from a balcony, and the fan, I believe, ended up being pushed off the balcony by sort of other more excitable fans. And, he's someone who kind of has that sort of like Joker type of energy, right? Where like he's like requesting there to be more chaos, requesting there to be like a more intense energy to it. So there were some posts that had gone viral in the wake of this and in the wake of the TikTok videos that have gone viral, where on Reddit, someone had said like years ago that they felt like a demonic energy at Travis Scott shows. But I've seen a lot of both people kind of doing their own quote-unquote firsthand accounts of feeling that there was a demonic energy there, and also a lot of people kind of piecing together demonic imagery in like Travis's music and career and like things like that. So
everything about this entire show was demonic, down to the shirt he was wearing, down to the way he was chanting as people were dying. You cannot tell me that the things that happened during this show was not some sort of demonic ritual.
So yeah, it's TikTok is a place where conspiracy theories can really thrive. I think people tend to flock to the comments of the videos too and make it more intense and kind of duet it and agree with it and kind of amplify a lot of these thoughts. So it's definitely been a pretty widespread thing that also continues to take away from the fact that there are real people who lost their lives. There are real people who are still in the hospital and still struggling. There are people who are going to have injuries potentially for the rest of their lives and severe trauma from what happened. And, you know, it's a satanic panic makes it easier to like not hold the actual people who are responsible for this, you know, as actually culpable for it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, creating this whole other alternative narrative that, you know, there was demonic energy, quote unquote, that was controlling the concert really doesn't. Yeah, it shifts blame. And it creates an alternative narrative that lets the concert organizers and Travis Scott himself, who reportedly went to Dave & Buster's after the event, despite seeing somebody, you know, there's footage showing him seeing somebody pass out in the crowd. I mean, it really absolves them of a lot of responsibility. And I think we really can't stress enough just how omnipresent these conspiracy theories were, to the point that, you know, when I was scrolling through my feed in the morning and looking up, you know, Astroworld videos, it kind of dwarfed the actual footage from the event, like witness accounts. And actually, when you searched Astroworld, the second thing that came up in TikTok's auto results was Astroworld demonic, or, you know, the third or fourth was Astroworld, Travis Scott, Illuminati. And that's a pretty stunning indictment of TikTok and how little it did to curb the spread of these conspiracy theories, which were getting millions and millions and millions of views. And actually, I didn't see any of those videos come down until days later when we actually started reporting on this and reaching out to the platform itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I you know, thinking about just the internet in times of tragedy or in times like this, like, it's been sort of disheartening and kind of alarming to watch a lot of the TikTok response to it, just because I think there is a lot of focus not only on the conspiracy theories, which were so widespread to the point where there were like so many people in my life who didn't even know Travis Scott, didn't even like weren't that familiar with his music prior to what happened, that they like were seeing these videos pop up on their For You page. Like, the algorithm was like serving them these very, very popular conspiracy theories that were placing the blame on Satan. But also, like, you know, there's been just sort of a mixture of like comparing and contrasting artists happening. Like, there's just been like a lot of not like real sort of, I don't know, nothing that's been kind of like helpful for the people who probably need it most right now.
Nothing helpful for the people who have been directly affected by this tragedy, but also, I mean, nothing helpful to people in general, like to the public good. I mean, we can talk about the dangers of misinformation all we want. And, you know, there have been studies that prove that, you know, TikTok's For You page can have a radicalizing effect, like a very real radicalizing effect on people who already harbor, you know, particularly conspiratorial views, and, you know, even further radicalize them. But I mean, TikTok also has even though TikTok is more mainstream now and it's growing hugely as a platform, it also skews younger. I think like a third of its users or something are under 16. And these are the people who are getting hit with, you know, essentially satanic panic garbage, like just completely baseless bullshit. These are the people who are, you know, seeing it first, like people under 16. And it's really telling that it took them such a long time to actually react to this while it was unfolding in real time and curb the spread of these theories. I think it did a lot of damage, honestly.
Yeah. And, you know, it's much easier to blame things on an invisible enemy. It's much easier for, I think, especially for people, you know, Travis Scott's type of artist that people worship. Like, if you are a Travis Scott stan, like, he's big enough that he can host his own festival. Like, he's someone who has, like, a wide range of, like, devotees to his music, to his brand. He's a heavily branded artist. Like, he's someone who has all these incredible big partnerships that, you know, are falling through right now and are, you know, not probably going to persist. But he's a person who has become like a very lucrative brand in and of itself, along with having like really popular music. So I think we're seeing a lot of younger fans, especially who, you know, may not be able to totally wrap their heads around the fact that an artist that they worship and love and listen to constantly and like, you know, went from listening to daily to like feeling a little uneasy listening to now. You know, it's just a person with faults and a person who like can fail miserably in this way as is someone putting together a big festival like this and putting together, you know, this type of show. Like, I think they're seeing that greed like this is inherently demonic. Like, greed like this is like, you know, it's just like it's not healthy and it's not good. It's not helpful. And it's, you know, not showing any sort of compassion or empathy towards the people who, again, died at this concert and are left with probably a lot of trauma and like both physical and emotional trauma. So like, obviously the story is going to be developing for months, if not at minimum a year. Like, there's going to be so many more updates on it. And I'm sure these conspiracy theories won't go away. So I'm very positive we're going to be returning to this story as it develops. So we're gonna go back into our regularly scheduled mix of nonsense. I know there's something that EJ wanted to try out.
Yeah, I mean, Brittany, can we include a skit in this podcast?
Actually, we can't include a skit because it comes off as really dumb and inorganic, and it'll turn what few listeners we have off.
Shh, she doesn't know I know. According to Section B97 of Paragraph 2 of Podcast Rules, we can include a skit in the podcast, but only if it comes off like we know that it's really stupid and we're being super self-aware about it.
Oh, who taught you that?
Erica did. She reads the fine print, so I don't have to. That's why you should follow her.
Oh, cool. I will.
That was really stupid, but I think it makes me laugh. I don't know. So basically, the Erica we're talking about is Money Lawyer Erica, or Erica Kohlberg. She has 4 million followers, and lately she's been blowing up and going viral for posting TikToks about these very obscure legal loopholes that people can use to either save money or, in some cases, just be obnoxious to service workers. But they're sort of packaged as, like, consumerist hacks. Here's an example.
Hi, my AirPods got stolen, so I'm here to get new ones for free. AppleCare doesn't cover stolen AirPods, sorry.
Shh, they don't know this hack, watch this.
Actually, I read the terms of my credit card benefit. Since I purchased the AirPods with my credit card, it includes theft protection, so they gave me money to buy brand new AirPods. Oh, that's neat. Who taught you that? Erica did. She's a lawyer and reads the fine print, so I don't have to. That's why I follow her.
So I looked at her LinkedIn just to get some more background on her, and apparently she does. She is a lawyer. She has a law degree from Georgetown. And she did previously work in corporate law, but since then, like a lot of people who have transitioned to TikTok, she's a YouTuber primarily and a general influencer. And her brand is very much about personal finance and also growing out your following on YouTube. And she has a lot of clickbait videos with titles like, "How I Quit My Job and Earned $700,000 in 1 Year," like in all caps.
Yeah. I see a lot of like a shocking number of ads that I get on TikTok are like that for like companies that are like, here's like how to like learn how to like hack your life. Maybe like companies are learning. Maybe my algorithm is learning that I would like to just not work and be rich somewhere. but like I get so many like that. I'm like, I didn't even realize there was like companies for that. But also the ads have a very similar energy that kind of have this, like, here's how to hack your life and, like, you know, just get everything for free without doing anything but buying into my company or my brand.
Yeah, she's got, like, very old school YouTube influencer energy.
Yeah.
I would say. And she's now pivoting to short form content. She has a huge following. And honestly, when I first saw her content, like, I thought it was cool. Like, I thought, you know, she was doing a public service. But I was curious as to whether or not the hacks actually work. And I went into her comments for a few of the videos. And yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of an oversimplification. Like with the AirPods one, she clarifies that you have to do a claim with your credit card company first. So you can't just go up there and get free AirPods from these customer service people. And I also feel like there's an aspect to this. Like I was sort of joking before about harassing service workers, but like it's great to save money and stick it to large corporations, but it's also making these people's lives harder, you know? Yeah. And nobody really like seems to be acknowledging that.
Yeah. I also like, I don't know. I never trust these types of loopholes. They never work. I feel like they're always kind of by chance, you know, like sometimes there are times when like sometimes you'll call like a customer service agent for a company because you're calling about something else. And then sometimes you'll get like a free treat. I feel like that's essentially what's happened to her with these things. And maybe she's like using her lawyer rules, but like she thinks that they're actually, I don't know. I think she thinks she's giving too much credit to her law degree and to like her, like, you know, business acumen that this is actually reality, but it's not.
So you think she just stumbled into this by accident? You think that it was totally like she just was annoying to a customer service person one time and it worked? Yeah. And yeah,
I'm sure she's just like being annoying and being like, well, I deserve something because I like asked for this. And it's like, no, sometimes you wear people down enough. It happens. But that's not a great strategy.
No, it's not. And actually the queen of this, like my mom really should start making TikToks like this because she is the absolute fucking queen of getting things she wants from customer service people. It's like her superpower. Yeah. Like she just got back from vacation and she was like, I got 85,000 points because I complained about some like ridiculous thing at the hotel that we were staying at. And I was like, honestly, I would not want to deal with you like on the other end of the line, but like respect to you. Like I see both sides to this.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Erica, she's also really using her platform to be like, she had a video about like how to use HR to ask for, you know, mental health leave. And I think that's really admirable of her to like teach people how to exploit corporate loopholes to actually, you know, better their lives. Like that's sort of the ultimate version of what she's doing now. But the template is so ridiculous that it spawned a lot of these different types of parodies, some of which are super funny.
Your boyfriend doesn't know you know this hack. Hi, honey. I noticed you haven't proposed to me yet. Yeah, I don't think we're in that stage of our relationship yet. Shh, he doesn't know I know this. Well, actually, I'm pregnant.
Which of these hacks would you try?
I wouldn't try any of them. I'm too nervous. I'm too neurotic. I would be way too terrified to try any of these. Would you? Have you successfully?
I don't know. I mean, there have been, you know, my typical thing is that I like to be as nice as possible to a customer service person. And sometimes that just helps. You know, if I'm asking for something else and I'm like, you know, just trying, there are so many times I've gotten an upgrade on flights because like something has happened and I've just been kind to the person. All they want to see is genuine kindness and it helps. So sometimes that's just the only nice thing to do.
So you think kindness is the ultimate
kindness
hack?
Kindness is the most effective hack in corporate, I don't know, liaison.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So there's something that you really want to talk about today. There is something that is
more important to me and my essential identity. And that is the fact that Taylor has released Red, Taylor's version. So, you know, quick background for those of you who don't spend most of your hours of the day listening to or talking about Taylor Swift. She is in the middle of re-recording her first 6 albums. And so basically under her first recording contract, which she signed as a teenager, and again, a lot of the terms of it are very unfortunately common in the music industry, she didn't own her master recordings. And so when she left the label, she's on a new label now. She went from Big Machine to, which is a country label, a bit of a smaller label, to Republic. Her master recordings were basically thrown into anyone's hands, and they got into the hands of like her original label boss now has them. He sold them off. Like, it's just, it's a whole mess. So now she's been basically re-recording all of them because she had to wait a year after and start this process so that she can own the recordings and make the original recordings less lucrative and less valuable for the people who now own it.
It's really petty and beautiful and such a power move.
It's petty. It's, you know, it's something that a lot of artists have wanted to do. A lot of Prince wanted to do it. You know, he wanted to re-record it, but it's a lot of work because the thing is, to make the original recordings less valuable, you have to be pretty identical as humanly possible to the original recordings. Like, you have to re-record the songs as close as possible to how they sounded the original time.
Wow.
Because that's what people want to listen to. That's what the original songs are. That's what, you know, that's how you kind of are able to make sure that you are managing the sync deals and that you're, you know, you can use it however you'd like. So she's been doing this really massive project, and a treat about it is that not only are you getting re-recordings of the new songs, and especially for the earlier albums, what's nice is like her voice is a lot better, a lot stronger. So you're kind of getting the songs just like better sung, but you're also getting like all of these From the Vault tracks. You're getting like songs that she wrote during those eras that she's now recording for the first time officially and putting on the album. So the new Red is like 30 songs long. And Red in particular is a bit of a fan favorite. I think a lot of people considered it to be her best album until she released Folklore last year, which, you know, I feel like those are kind of the top two for a lot of people, a lot of hardcore Taylor fans. But it's an album that's full of really devastating ballads. And it also is the first album that saw her pivoting from country to pop. So it's a big deal in terms of her own trajectory as a pop star. Like, we'd get 1989 immediately after Red. Of course, Red has We Are Never Getting Back Together in 22, I Knew You Were Trouble. Those were big sort of Max Martin pop singles that did really well for her. It's also a bit of Taylor lore to it because it's, you know, she hasn't confirmed. She's very like Carly Simon in that sense where she like doesn't directly say like this song's about him, but we know what we've seen, and we know that the lyrics match up with a lot of what we've seen in terms of publicity photos of her and Jake Gyllenhaal around the time that she was 20, 21, roaming around Brooklyn, going upstate, her hanging out with Maggie Gyllenhaal, you know. So the songs are basically just really ripping Jake Gyllenhaal to shreds. He was an older boyfriend. He was 30 at the time. She was 20. She brings up the ages a lot, the age difference a lot on the album. So if
and
you're
this is a pattern that Jake has continued to this day.
Yes.
Right?
So, yes, she really rips it to shreds on a couple of the From the Vault songs. So one of them in particular is the 10-minute version of All Too Well. And for a lot of Taylor fans, and also I think even like casual fans of Taylor's music, All Too Well is a song that was never released as a single, but is considered to be her best song. It is absolutely one of her best songs. And I feel that way. Rob Sheffield ranked all of her songs. He also put it number one. Like, it's a very, you know, basic choice of like, this is the best song that Taylor has ever written. And it's already a pretty devastating song, but she has teased for many years that the original version of it was written pretty soon after the breakup had happened. And she went to the studio with her band and she just kind of like, they just kind of riffed and they did like a 10 minute version of the song that only existed in a demo live take. And so she finally released the 10 minute version on Red Taylor's version. It, the full name of this version is All Too Well, 10 minute version from the vault, Taylor's version. so, you know, it's just how it is. And so fans have been really waiting for that. And also there's on that song, she is like even more intense about what happened. She talks about him not coming to her 21st birthday and her dad dragging him for it. She talks about the, he had a keychain that said fuck the patriarchy on it.
Oh God, that's brutal.
There's a line where she's like, I get old. She's like, I'm not too good at jokes, but the punchline goes, I get older and all your girls stay the same age. So, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is currently dating a 25-year-old. Just so we are, that he's been with since she was 22, you know, stuff like that. We have the basic facts. We know enough. We've seen and we know enough to put together who and what's about. So, of course, in the weeks leading up to this, people have been looking forward to this for so long, and she's been doing huge rollouts for all of the re-recordings as well. She's not just like dropping them on social media, or not on social media, on like streaming services, and like being like, hey, enjoy. She's doing full rollouts. So people have been really, really excited about it. Taylor joined TikTok around the time of the rollouts too. So she's been having fun on TikTok with it.
Mostly cat videos, as she said.
Yes. And so if you're like me, a mentally ill Taylor Swift stan, TikTok has been full of like content leading up to it. People kind of like anticipating it. So some of my favorites that were in like the weeks leading up were people like preparing how they were going to listen to the re-recorded tracks. So like there was one girl who is in a car, like a parked car, and she's like swerving the steering wheel and pretending she's going to crash while listening to like the bridge of Come Back, Be Here, a song that is allegedly written about Harry Styles. Before the 1989 breakup songs, of course. This is like the early relationship Taylor Swift, Harry Styles songs. And the overlay text on the TikTok reads, practicing how my freshly dumped self is going to hear this bridge for the first time. There was also a boyfriend who made this TikTok of him like making his girlfriend's bed, and he said that he was putting in the extra work so that she feels no emotional connection to Red Taylor's version. A lot of people being like, I'm just like trying to get dumped before this happens. I remember seeing like a weeks ago, someone had put in their Bumble profile, like, I'm looking to have a whirlwind romance and dump you right before Red Taylor's version comes out. Like, people are committing to the feelings. So like when albums drop and, you know, you're on TikTok, it's a very fun experience for, you know, especially albums that you're really excited about. This was happening with like Summer Walker's album a couple weeks ago. Like, there's a similar sort of like listening party energy to it. But this one has been particularly drawn out experience. And I'm sure I'm going to keep seeing Taylor Swift content on my For You page for weeks to come as a mentally ill Swiftie.
No, I don't think you understand. I'm obsessed.
So TikTok is inherently a visual medium, and that can often cause a problem for us on the podcast. And this is another example of that, because I just really wish that we could show you guys this choreography, this video of Hilary Duff dancing on the Today Show, which is going viral right now.
Had you not seen it before TikTok?
No, of course I'd seen it. Oh, okay. Oh boy, had I seen it.
I was just making sure.
Of course I've seen it. I'm a big Hilary Duff stan from way back.
And the same thing with like the Fergie somersault backflip. Well, I don't know what she's doing. I don't know what that's technically called, but the Fergie flips that have recently become also very popular on TikTok. I'm like, I wonder if people are just now seeing this for the first time or if they have lived through going through like 100 tweet threads that are like, here are the most iconic moments in pop culture. And then like tweet number like 74 is Fergie doing flips on the Today Show or... Hillary Duff dancing poorly on the Today Show.
Yeah, I think of it in the same genre of content as Jesse from Little Mix doing a Jamaican accent, which I probably send my friends like every 6 months. And same with Hillary Duff dancing.
Yeah.
But so let's watch the video and try to describe it as best as possible. Okay, so she's like pop and locking kind of. And now she's like waving her hands up in the air and swooping back and forth and like posing. And then there's some more pop and locking. And she's wearing this weird like Paddington-esque dress in this Today Show performance. But she did it like a couple times, right? Because she was promoting that one single that was released with her perfume.
That dance we've seen, there's like a late night show where she had also done it. You know, Hillary Duff, she's a good actress.
Is she?
And I like her personality.
Do you? Do you?
I find her delightful. I when I saw the photo of Hillary Duff giving her hockey player husband a blowjob and a paparazzi photo. Have you ever seen that one?
Oh yes. I remember. I completely forgot about that.
So much respect for her.
That's true, but she wasn't doing that on purpose. She was just like
no curtains at all. No curtains at all. Anyway, I'm obsessed with, ever since then, I've been like, you know what? That's a bad bitch. And I love Hillary Duff. I will always love Lizzie McGuire. And I think that she is a wonderful personality, like a public figure. Some talent she doesn't have. Singing, one of them.
Not one of them.
But you don't have to be a good singer to have a bop. And that's, again, very true with Hillary Duff because Come Clean and Yesterday. Bops. But dancing, also not one of her skills. It's a lot of awkward hand movements. Her face looks deeply uncomfortable. She looks like she just is sad that she's doing it. She looks depressed that she has to move like that.
And her backup dancers are at least 15 years older than her and also look depressed that they have to be doing that.
Because they probably are like, why do we have to show up this early? Because the Today Show films hella early. To do a dance that is like maybe like 10% of what they could do to keep up with the pop star who could do even less than what she's already doing on stage.
She's
Hillary Duff though.
She's giving like 0% and they're giving like 200% to sort of offset that, which is admirable. And I also kind of think like in order to be a pop girly, like you have to be able to do at least one of the following three, which is singing, dancing, or acting. And in my opinion, she can't do any of them.
I don't think so.
You think, how many do you think you have to do to be a pop girl?
Zero. It's not really
zero.
It's about good production. Rolling Stone music journalist here.
Yeah, exactly. That's a shocking disclosure.
To be a pop star, you don't need anything. No, I mean, sometimes if you just have a good song and you perform it, like I do think she's like at least talented acting. I do, like, I will maintain that. But like, I think
the vocal riff in Raise Your Voice is good. You think Raise Your Voice is a good movie, and moreover that the vocal riff. La 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 la.
I mean, not all of her movies are bangers, but Cinderella Story, come on now. That was a film.
Agree to disagree. But this challenge is going viral. There are a lot of people, you know, who are actually really good dancers, like Alex Wong from So You Think You Can Dance, who are doing it on TikTok. And I didn't know this, but it's actually an example of a style of pop dancing called soft choreo, which is literally choreography for someone who can't really dance. And this guy explains it really well.
I'm so glad that people are doing the Hillary Duff challenge on TikTok, myself included, but it's time for me to reclaim this narrative. This is called soft choreo. I've been analyzing it for years in real life and for the past year on TikTok. So now you're wondering, what is soft choreo? Let me show you. This is soft choreo. I call this Toddlers in Tiaras realness. This is a classic example, often referred to as the corkscrew or the can opener. Another soft choreo legend, I call this baby animal learning how to walk for the first time. We know who this is. This is that girl from middle school who didn't want to go to the school dance because it wasn't cool. And then she suddenly wants to dance. You know. And my personal favorite, soft choreo's origin story, Miss Sultry Square Dance herself.
This was around the time that all the pop stars were releasing like fragrances. And this song was actually written for the fragrance, yeah, to promote the fragrance With Love by Hilary Duff.
We act like they're not all still releasing fake fragrances. They all still are constantly releasing fragrances. And now they've all moved on to makeup brands as well.
Is that still a thing?
It's all still a thing. Billie Eilish literally just launched a fragrance this week. Ariana Grande is on her like third fragrance now, and she just launched a makeup brand. Selena Gomez has a makeup brand. Halsey has a makeup brand. Everyone's doing all of those things at once. Like, they're still very popular because people, like Shawn Mendes has a perfume.
What does it smell like? Do you know?
Ass. I got it. I didn't like it. I don't like I have a lot of friends who really love the Ariana Grande Cloud perfume. I opened it and it gave me a huge, huge migraine. Something in it I might be allergic to because it was not good. It was too sweet, really gross. But I have friends who like swear by it. It's just a nasty perfume to me. But a lot of people, Rihanna just launched a fragrance, or she's about to launch a fragrance. But obviously Rihanna is, you know, she's on the business side, but still.
That's interesting. I always thought it was like an early 2000s era thing.
No, it's still pretty popular. It's not like, you know, every single person. It's really kind of, I think, like a lot of the bigger people can get away with it because it still makes you a lot of money. Like Britney Spears is a good example of like, you, if you do it right, you're literally like all of your money can be made off of, if you partner with the right perfumery, like it could be like most of your money is made from that. But Britney Spears' perfumes are really good.
Well, if this choreography is any indication, With Love, the perfume was not. I bet it smelled like Jolly Ranchers and Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah, I'm sure that like it also does not smell good. I just want to like see the notes on it because I feel like it's discontinued. That's what I've just learned. Oh, apparently Adam Levine has a very good perfume. It's a good Le Labo Santal dupe, I learned.
Oh, that's nice. I want to try that.
Yeah, I was like,
I'm not a big perfume person, but sure.
I only learned it because I was looking for cheaper versions of Le Labo Santal, and apparently Adam Levine's perfume is that. So the main notes of Hilary Duff's perfume, top note is tropical. It's also described as woody, fruity, amber, warm, spicy, sweet, musky, floral. It's a lot of things.
Too many things.
Sites.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Spices and mangosteen. The middle notes are cocoa bolo, mangosteen blossom, and the base notes are amber and musk.
Doesn't sound great. The only celebrity perfume I ever bought was Jessica Simpson when she had the dessert body line, and I used it on my high school boyfriend. And
I wanted that so badly, and my mom said
it was delicious.
Too young for it.
Well, my mom would have told me the same thing, but I bought it anyway. And and also, my mom would have said, "Are you going to use that for sex?" And I did, so she would have been right. But my face blew up seconds after I used it, and that's how I figured out I had a peanut allergy. Is from Jessica Simpson dessert. It was delicious, though. I wish that people still sold that. It was great.
I've chosen this Himbo of the Week because this video is so delightful. And it's a good example of ladies, if he wanted to, he would. So this week we have a Himbo roommate who stepped up to the challenge and committed for his friend. User Olivia Leonard did a dorm room version of this California Girls Dance set to Katy Perry's hit song, one of her best songs, that's been going around. And it's kind of just like a lot of couples do it, where like the girl sort of like pulls in her boyfriend. And like the point is getting your like, I guess, straight boyfriend to do a kind of femme dance with or for you. It's whatever.
It's very big on TikTok.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like if that works for you, go for it. Anyway, Olivia's boyfriend refused to do it. So what you see is you see Olivia in the front of the video. Her boyfriend's like laying on the top of a bunk bed in the back, playing with his phone, not even paying attention. But he should be paying attention because after she sort of pulls in her dance partner, who is her roommate, he goes off. So her roommate, whose name is Noah, fully commits to the dance. He does it just with just such delight in him, with his beautiful mullet. You know, he puts his all into every hip shake for Miss Olivia. And as the comments point out, sometimes the obvious choice is the right one. So I think, you know, Olivia should reconsider where she's putting her energy.
So is this like a couch talk? Is this a couch talk situation where people are like team Noah and not team bunk bed boyfriend?
Oh, yeah. Everyone's like how is he not your boyfriend? Blah, blah, blah. It's really, they're very pro. It's a pro Noah moment for this video.
I really like this TikTok trend where people are just pointing out the vulnerabilities in people's intimate relationships. Yes. I think that's a really healthy thing for society that this has become normal.
Yeah. It's just, it's a weird vibe, but here we are.
So but congratulations to Noah.
Yeah. Shout out to Noah. I haven't seen any responses from either of them yet, but you know, this isn't like the couch talk where like they're heavily trying to prove that everything's all right, but I'm rooting for Noah. Maybe there's no response yet because Olivia is figuring out where her loyalties must lie.
Yeah, maybe she's getting offline and touching grass instead of everybody in the comments talking about how she should dump bunk bed guy for
Olivia,
Noah.
Why aren't you making more content? stop living your life and make us some follow-up content.
Thanks so much for listening to Don't Let This Flop, This Week in TikTok, brought to you by Rolling Stone and Cumulus Podcast Network, written and hosted by me, EJ Dixon, and Brittany Spanos. Executive produced by Jason Fine, Bridget Shelsey, and Elizabeth Garber-Paul. Edited by Dan Stein, and original music composed by Daniel Mertzloft.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.